Even if a surprise attack could be launched, not every Jedi would be in the field.
Only those suitable for combat would need concern us.
Palpatine broke a long silence. The Kaminoan cloners failed you once. Damask acknowledged the statement with a nod.
Because I gave them a Yenchuri template. They told me then that your species might be easier to replicate.
You'll contact them again?
This army must not be traced to us. But there is someone I might be able to persuade to place the initial order.
Palpatine waited, but Damask had nothing to add. The fact that he had said as much about the matter as he intended to say brought Palpatine full circle to consternation. Abruptly, he stood and paced away from the bench.
Instruct the Nymordians to launch the blockade,
Damask said to his back.
It's important that events be set in motion before the Orbital Facility Congress.
When Palpatine didn't respond, Plagueis stood and followed him.
What's troubling you, Sidious? Perhaps you feel that you've become nothing more than a messenger.
Palpatine whirled on him. Yes, at times. But I know my place, and am content with it.
What, then, has whipped you to a froth?
The Nymordians, Palpatine said with sudden conviction. In addition to Gunray, I have been dealing with three others. Hako, Galte, and Monchar.
I know Monchar slightly. He maintains a suite in the Kaldani spires.
He was absent when I last spoke with Gunray. Suspicion bloomed in the Mune's eyes, and he hissed.
Where were they, then?
Aboard their flagship. Gunray claimed that Monchar had taken ill as a result of rich food.
But you know better.
Palpatine nodded. The sniveling toady knows about the blockade. I suspect that he's on the loose and out for profit. Damask's eyes flashed yellow.
This is what happens when beings are promoted beyond their level of competence.
Palpatine tensed in anger.
Not you, Gunray and his ilk. The Force harrows and penalizes us for consorting with those too ignorant to appreciate and execute our designs.
Palpatine took comfort in the fact that even Plagueis had his limits. I fail to heed your words about sudden reversals. Damask frowned at him, then relaxed.
I ignore my own advice. The blockade must wait.
I will recall Maul, Palpatine said. Two weeks after the Nymordians' unannounced disappearance from the flagship Sayakak, Plagueis and Sidious knew only that Darth Maul had succeeded in tracking down and killing Hath Monchar, though not without wide-ranging collateral damage, and that Maul had piloted the stealth infiltrator to a docking station linked by a series of zero-G airlocks to the Pelimian Orbital Facility's principal reception dome, a grand enclosure that looked out on a sweep of Coruscant and the stars beyond, and was designed to feel more like a garden in space than a sterile conference hall. Just then, the dome was filled with senators and judges, corporate leaders and ambassadors, power brokers and media pundits, and contingents of Senate guards and Jedi.
Why did you order him to come here, of all places?
Damask asked Palpatine during a respite from the handshaking casual conversation and forced conviviality. Dressed in their finest robes, they were standing near a backlighted waterfall, nodding to passing beings, even as the two of them conspired.
He has cut a swath of destruction through the Crimson Corridor and killed two Jedi, along with beings of a dozen species, including a Hutt. We can't trust that someone isn't on his scent. If not Jedi, then perhaps law enforcement personnel. If by some fluke he were to be apprehended, he has the skill to scramble the minds of ordinary beings, but not to cloak himself from a Jedi. Both our existence and our plans for the blockade could be endangered.
Jedi were on his scent,
Palpatine explained.
That's precisely why I ordered him off-world.
Damask started to respond, but stopped himself and began again.
He is in possession of this holocron mantra recorded.
Palpatine nodded.
I instructed Pestage to clear a route through a seldom-used docking bay. I merely have to rendezvous with Maul at the prearranged time and place.
Damask still wasn't convinced. The Monchar affair had almost ended in catastrophe. It was as if the Force, so often compared to a current, had been diverted into a sheer canyon and twisted back on itself to generate treacherous eddies and hydraulics.
Why not simply have him surrender the crystal to Pestige?
We don't know what other sensitive data the holocron might contain.
Damask exhaled forcefully through the mask.
I trust that at least you instructed him not to be seen.
He glanced around him.
A tattooed Zabrak enrobed in head-to-toe black would certainly stand out among this crowd.
Palpatine couldn't argue the point. Off to one side of them stood Senator Bail Antilles and his aides, a prince on his homeworld of Alderaan and chair of the Senate's Internal Activities Committee. The handsome, dark-haired Antilles was surrounded by a crowd that included core world senators and business beings, all of whom had pledged to support him in the coming election, and Jedi Master Joris Sabaoth, who had been enlisted to arbitrate a dispute among some of Alderaan's royal houses. An arrogant and wild-eyed human, Sabaoth was cut from the same cloth as Dooku, whose absence from the political gathering had been noted by many. Antilles had been the Sith's pawn in bringing to the fore accusations of wrongdoing on the part of Valorum during the Eriadu crisis. But the notoriety he had gained as a result, in the Senate and in the media, had bolstered his campaign and made him the current top candidate for the chancellorship. No Jedi had attached themselves to Ainley Teem, who was also within view. But the Malastare Gran was widely popular on many mid- and outer-rim worlds, and enjoyed the support of Senator Lot Dodd of the Trade Federation and Shu Mai of the Commerce Guild. At the center of the domed hall stood Valorum and Se Taria, who was as media-savvy as she was lovely. Though ineligible for re-election, recently stripped of some of his senatorial powers, and frequently engaged in defending himself against accusations by the Ethics Committee, Valorum had managed to make himself the center of attention due to the presence of Masters Yoda, Mace Windu, and Adi Gallia among his followers. Merely by standing with the Supreme Chancellor, the Jedi were sending a message that they would continue to support him for the remainder of his term of office, the calumny of illegal enrichment notwithstanding. With the Trade Federation fleet still holding in the Chamal sector, and without a besieged world to generate sympathy and support for his nomination, Palpatine might have been just one more potential nominee, but for the company of Higo Damask, Banking Clan co-chairman San Hill, recently appointed Senate Vice Chairman Mas Amida, and Senator Ornfri Tarr, a moving target for Antilles' investigation into corruption, and now ostracized by the Rim faction for backing Palpatine.
It's almost time, Palpatine said.
He indicated a gardened area of dwarf trees and shrubs close to where Anli Teem was conferring with a handful of senators.
I'll trade quips with the Grand, then find some pretext to excuse myself.
Damask grunted noncommittally.
My own target is in sight in any case.
Without further word, the two separated, Damask weaving his way through the crowd toward a grim-faced, bearded human Jedi who was standing apart from everyone observing the scene.
Master Sifo Dyas.
The top-knotted Jedi turned, and recognizing him, nodded in greeting.
Magister Damask.
I hope I'm not intruding.
Sifo Dyas shook his head, his gaze fixed on the breath mask.
No, I was... He exhaled and began again, adjusting his stance. Until your recent arrival on Coruscant, I was under the impression that you had retired. Damask loosed an exaggerated sigh.
It is not in Immune's blood to retire. I work now with only a few powerful but largely invisible clients.
The Jedi lifted a graying eyebrow. It seems I can't view a news hollow that doesn't feature you and Senator Palpatine, who is anything but invisible.
To my thinking, he is the only one capable of rescuing the Republic from the brink.
Sifo Dyas grunted. To remain untouched by scandal for 20 years is in itself extraordinary. So perhaps you're right. Damask waited a moment, then said,
I have never forgotten our discussion on Sereno.
What discussion was that, Magister?
We spoke at some length of threats that were assailing the Republic even then.
Sifo Dyas grew pensive. I have some vague recollection.
Well, what with assassinations, taxation of the free trade zones, posturing by the Trade Federation, and accusations of political impropriety, the conversation has been much on my mind of late. Fractiousness, factionalism, inter-system conflicts. Even in this hall, the Jedi appear to be divided in their loyalties. Master Sybioth here, Masters Yoda and Galea there, and yet no sign of Master Dooku.
Sifo Dyas said nothing.
Master Jedi, I want to share with you a suspicion I've been carrying like a burden.
Damask paused.
I have reason to suspect that the Trade Federation has secretly been procuring more weapons than anyone realizes.
Sifo Dyas's forehead furrowed. Do you have evidence of this?
No hard evidence. But my business demands a thorough knowledge of the investment markets. Also, my clients sometimes reveal information to me in private.
Then you are breaking confidentiality by coming to me with this.
I am, but only because I believe so strongly that what was once speculation is now fact. To go further, I predict that a civil war is brewing. I give the Republic 15 years at the most. Soon we'll see disgruntled star systems begin to secede. They will lack only a strong, charismatic leader to unite them.
He fell briefly silent before adding,
I will be blunt with you, Master Sifo Dyas. The Republic will be vulnerable. The Jedi will be too few to turn the tide. A military needs to be created now, while there's still a chance.
Sifo Dyas folded his arms across his chest. I encourage you to share this with Supreme Chancellor Valorum, or even Senator Palpatine, Magister.
I intend to. But even under Chancellor Valorum's watch, this Senate will not overturn the Reformation Act. Too many senators have a financial stake in galactic war. They are heavily invested in corporations that will grow fat on profits from weapons and reconstruction. War will be beneficial for an economy they now view as stagnant.
Are you willing to state this in front of an investigatory committee? Damask frowned with his eyes.
You have to understand that many of these corporations are owned and operated by my clients.
A dark look came over the Jedi's face. You have read my thoughts, Magister. I have also sensed that war is imminent. I've confessed as much to Master Yoda and others, but to no avail. They give all appearances of being unconcerned or preoccupied. I'm no longer sure.
Master Dooku as well.
Sifo Dyas sniffed. Unfortunately, Magister, Dooku's recent statements about Republic discord and our order's self-righteousness have only added to my concern.
You said that you have some vague recall of our conversation on Sereno. Do you remember my mentioning a group of gifted cloners?
I'm sorry, I do not.
They are native to an extragalactic world called Kamino. I have, on occasion, done business with them on behalf of clients who desire cloned creatures or require cloned laborers capable of working in harsh environments.
The Jedi shook his head in uncertainty.
What does this have to do with anything?
I believe that the Kaminoans could be induced to grow and train a cloned army.
Sifo Dyas took a long moment to reply.
You said yourself that the Republic would never sanction an army.
The Republic needn't know. Neither would the Jedi Order have to know. It would be an army that might never have to be used, and yet be available in reserve should need ever arise.
Who in their right mind would fund an army that might never be used?
I would, along with some of my associates in the banking clan, and in conjunction with contacts in Rothana Heavy Engineering, which would supply the ships, armaments, and other materiel.
Sifo Dyas fixed him with a look.
Come to the point, Magister.
The Kaminoans will not create an army for me, but they would do so for the Jedi Order. They have been fascinated by the Jedi for millennia.
Sifo Dyas's dark brown eyes widened.
You're not proposing cloning Jedi?
No. I have been assured that such a thing is impossible in any case. But I have also been assured that a human army, a million strong, could be ready for deployment in as few as 10 years.
You're suggesting that I circumvent the High Council?
I suppose I am. The Kaminoans need only a modest down payment, which I could provide to you through untraceable accounts I maintain in Outer Rim banks.
Again the Jedi remained silent for a long moment.
I need time to consider this.
Of course you do. And when you've reached a decision, you can contact me at my residence downside.
Sifo Dyas nodded in glum introspection, and Damask spun on his heel and disappeared into the crowd. Palpatine was just returning to the place where they had been standing earlier, his eyes and his movements suggesting unusual excitement.
You have the holocron,
Damask said as he approached.
Yes, but not from Maul.
Damask waited for an explanation.
It was dropped into my hand by none other than the information broker Maul had been pursuing and thought dead,
Lorne Pavan.
The fact that Pavan's right hand had been cleanly and recently amputated told me at once that the two fought in one of the airlocks.
This Pavan defeated Maul.
Palpatine shook his head.
But I suspect that Pavan somehow managed to outwit him and take him by surprise.
Incredible, Damask said,
astonished that events could become even more convoluted.
Then Pavan must know what the holocron contains.
I'm supposed to deliver it to the Jedi, Palpatine said with obvious amusement.
And looking around added,
perhaps to Yoda or Windu.
Pavan.
Palpatine squared his shoulders.
Pestige and Doriana are escorting him downside, where he'll receive medical attention, maybe even a new hand, and a comfortable hotel suite in which to spend the final day of his life.
A reward we should withhold from Maul, but probably won't.
Damask glanced at Palpatine.
In any event, it wasn't Pavan who handed you the holocron. It was delivered by the dark side.
Palpatine thought about it for a moment.
And Sifo Dyas, will he do it?
Even if he decides against it, there may be a way to place the order in his name. But the Force tells me that he will do it.
That will make him a potential danger to us.
Damask nodded.
But it won't matter. We have become invincible.
This will never do.
Palpatine thought as he sat opposite Valorum in the Supreme Chancellor's cloud-cutting office in the Senate building, listening to him drawn on about his troubles with the Ethics Committee. The view through the large triangular windows was pleasant enough, but the office was far too small. Worse, it felt more like a relic from a bygone age than a nerve center for the new order. No amount of remodeling could transform it into the space Palpatine imagined for himself. Perhaps a new building was required, an annex of sorts, or, better still, an executive office building, if only to grant those who worked there the illusion that their pitiful efforts mattered.
The deeper my lawyers and accountants pursue this matter, the more dead ends they encounter, Valorum was saying.
Dark circles underscored his eyes, and his hands were trembling slightly.
The erodium ingots the Nebula Front stole from the Trade Federation freighter were converted to credits, which were used to finance their operations on Asmaru and Eriadu. But the ingots themselves moved through a series of specious banks and other financial institutions and were ultimately invested in Valorum shipping by unknown parties. I say unknown because the beings listed as investors appear never to have existed.
Baffling, Palpatine said, drawing out the word. I don't know what to think.
A week had passed since the Perlemian political gathering. Lorne Pavan was dead by Maul's lightsaber, a day before an artificial hand was to have been grafted to the information broker's stub of forearm.
Cost-cutting, Plagueis had remarked at the time.
Valorum was resting his head in his hands.
That someone or some organization engineered this to cripple me is beyond doubt. The question of why anyone, even my most stalwart detractors in the Senate, would essentially discard tens of millions of credits to achieve this in the final months of my term is inexplicable.
He raised his face to Palpatine.
My immediate predecessors were bold, and they knew how to manage the Senate. I believed I could bring something different to the office, a quieter diplomacy, one informed by the Force and by the ideals of the Jedi Order.
Palpatine suppressed an urge to leap across the desk and strangle him.
I realize that I've made some poor decisions, but has any Chancellor in the past century had to face more challenges than I have? Has any Chancellor had to deal with a more corrupt and self-serving Senate, or more megalomaniacal corporations?
Valorum closed his eyes and exhaled.
Whoever is behind this machination wants nothing more than to destroy my legacy entirely, to make the name Valorum seem a stain on history.
Then we must double our efforts to exonerate you, Palpatine said.
Valorum laughed without amusement.
I'm useless to the Republic if we can't. Until the matter is resolved, I'm prohibited from sanctioning the use of Jedi or judicials to intervene in disputes. I'm not permitted to convene special sessions without the express consent of this new Vice-Chancellor, Masa Mida, who blocks my every proposal and venerates procedure as if it were holy text.
Deception begins with bureaucracy, Palpatine said. Silent for a moment, Valorum adopted an expression of resolve.
I'm not without ideas.
He tapped a touchscreen built into his desk, and a large data display resolved above the holoprojector. Rising from his chair, he indicated a graph on which several dozen corporations were listed.
One might assume, in light of the accusations stacked against me, that my family's concern on Eriadu would suffer a sudden decline in the market, but precisely the opposite is happening. Credits have been flowing into Valorum shipping at an unparalleled rate, and to several other shipping and transport concerns as well. many of them based in the Outer Rim. And that's not all.
His hands returned to the touchscreen, and a second graph took shape alongside the first.
Investments in minor suppliers of plasma and alternative energy conglomerates have increased threefold. But most important, a surge has occurred in the military supply sector, with astonishing growth in Bactoid Armor Workshop, Hayor Chal Engineering, the Colicoid Creation Nest, and similar providers.
Palpatine, despite himself, was impressed.
What do these data suggest? That some nefarious business is unfolding under our very noses. That even the scandal in which I'm embroiled may be part of a larger plan.
Palpatine was about to respond when the voice of Valorum's personal secretary issued from the intercom.
Supreme Chancellor, I apologize for interrupting, but we have received an urgent transmission from Queen Amidala of Naboo.
The Queen?
Palpatine said with theatrical surprise.
Can you direct the transmission to my office? Valorum said.
Our comtechs are telling me that the signal is very weak, but that they will do their best.
Palpatine and Valorum turned to the office holoprojector table and waited. Within moments, a noisy, fluctuating 3D image of Naboo's pale-faced teenage queen appeared.
Supreme Chancellor Valorum, we bring news of a grave development on our homeworld. Without warning, the Nymordian faction of the Trade Federation has initiated a blockade. Their massive freighters encircle our world, and no ships are permitted to arrive or depart.
Palpatine and Valorum exchanged stunned looks.
How perfectly she plays her part, Palpatine thought.
Sitting on her throne like some costumed and overly made-up animatronic doll, the stately pose, the uninflected voice, long-bearded advisor Sayo Bibble standing to one side, dark-complected security chief Panaka to the other.
Your Highness, have the Nymordians communicated any demands?
Valorum asked as the blue-tinged image flickered, stabilized, and flickered again.
Viceroy Gunray states that the blockade has been launched in protest of the Senate's decision to tax shipping in the free trade zones. He assures that any attempts to break the embargo will meet with deadly force. Unless the new regulations are rescinded, he is prepared to see everyone on Naboo starve.
Valorum clenched his hands.
Your Majesty, Senator Palpatine is here with me.
Neither Amidala's expression nor her flat tone of voice wavered.
Senator Palpatine, we are pleased that you are able to hear this news firsthand.
Your Highness,
Palpatine said, stepping into view of the holoprojector cams and inclining his head.
I will contact the Trade Federation delegates immediately and demand that this blockade be terminated.
Demands may not be enough to sway them, Senator. Naboo requests that the Republic intervene in this matter as quickly as possible.
And it will, Your Highness, Valorum said all too quickly. I will convene a special session. I pledge that Naboo will have my undivided attention.
Amidala nodded.
You have shown us much courtesy in the past, Supreme Chancellor. We trust that you will do everything in your power, as you are our only hope.
The transmission ended abruptly.
The face of this nefarious business reveals itself, Palpatine said.
Valorum returned to his desk and sat.
I give you my word for your help during the Yunchori crisis and for so many years of friendship that this situation will not stand. Though my hands be bound, I will find some way to resolve this.
I know that you will try, Supreme Chancellor. Valorum took a deep breath.
One word of advice, Palpatine. Prepare to be thrust into the spotlight.
Chapter 29. The Force Strikes Back. Though the blockade of Naboo had been launched in direct defiance of Republic law, as much a protest against taxation as it was a challenge to the jurisdiction of the Jedi, It failed to achieve the immediate effect Plagueis Insidious had anticipated. Far from the core, Naboo hadn't been invaded, and no important beings had died, as had occurred during the Yenchori crisis and at the summit on Eriadu. Thus, the blockade was viewed by many as little more than saber-rattling by the vexed Trade Federation, an inconvenience to those worlds that relied on the Consortium for goods, the latest in a series of confrontations to expose the incompetence of a hopelessly splintered Senate. Nevertheless, the two Sith had worked tirelessly to make the most of Naboo's predicament, to secure support among Palpatine's peers, and ensure not only that his name would be placed in nomination, but that he could win if nominated. Equally important, they had to make certain that Palpatine could marshal enough votes in the Senate to ratify his decision to appoint Higo Damask co-chancellor. For a change, Damask had taken the lead, making the rounds, making promises, calling in long overdue favors and debts, while Palpatine, for appearance's sake, made several futile attempts to meet privately with Trade Federation representative Lot Dad. Pestige, Doriana, Janus Grigiatis, Armand Izard, and others were also busy behind the scenes, planting incriminating evidence where necessary, and seeing to it that instances of graft were made public. Their efforts did not constitute a political campaign so much as an exercise in elaborate subterfuge.
"Bail and Dillys remains the front runner," Plagueis told Sidious when he arrived at the Mune's penthouse. "Ironically, the crisis at Naboo has drawn the core worlds into a tighter circle. Where Antilles has always been in danger of being dismissed as the candidate most likely to follow in Valorum's footsteps, he is suddenly the darling of those advocating for strong central authority."
"He can be undermined," Sidious said. "What about Team?"
"In addition to the Trade Federation, Team now has the backing of the Corporate Policy League."
Sidious remained indifferent. "The Senate is not ready to elect a militant, much less a militant Gran. Embracing the support of the CPL is equivalent to promising the repeal of anti-slavery restrictions." Plagueis' frustration was evident, even if his frown was hidden.
"Interest in Naboo is already beginning to wane, and with it, the sympathy vote we counted on."
Sidious had his mouth open to respond, when his comlink chimed, and he held the device to his ear. Plagueis watched him closely.
"That is most welcome news," Sidious said into the device, as if in a daze. "I didn't expect this. A good choice, I think. I'm certain of it, Supreme Chancellor. Yes, I'm sure she meant every word of it."
"What now?"
Plagueis asked the moment Palpatine broke the connection. Sidious shook his head in disbelief.
"Valorum somehow managed to persuade the Council to send two Jedi to Naboo."
Despite all his talk about invincibility, Plagueis looked confounded.
"Without Senate approval, he tightens the noose around his own neck."
"And ours," Sidious said. "If the Nymoidians panic and decide to admit the truth about the blockade..."
Plagueis paced away from him in anger.
"He must have approached the High Council in secret. Otherwise, Mas Amida would have apprised us."
Sidious followed the Mune's nervous movements.
"Dooku mentioned that the Council would continue to support him."
"Did Valorum say which Jedi were sent?"
"Qui-Gon Jinn and his Padawan Obi-Wan Kenobi."
Plagueis came to an abrupt halt.
"Worse news yet. I have met Qui-Gon, and he is nothing like some of the others Dooku trained."
"They are a pesky duo," Sidious said. "The nemesis of the Nebula Front at Dorvala, Asmeru, and on Eriadu."
"Then Gunray and his sycophants stand no chance against them."
Sidious had an answer ready.
"Two lone Jedi are no match for thousands of battle droids and droidekas. I will order Gunray to kill them."
"And we will have another Yinchor, and the added danger of Gunray divulging our actions past and present."
Plagueis thought for a moment.
Qui-Gon will evade detection by the droids and wreak slow but inevitable havoc on the flagship.
Then I will command Gunray to launch the invasion ahead of schedule. Protecting the Naboo will become the immediate concern, as opposed to arresting the Nymoidians. Gunray may balk at the idea, but I will assure him that the Republic will not intervene.
Plagueis agreed. Amida can deny any request Valorum makes to convene the Senate in special session. Still...
They regarded each other in stony silence. Then Sidious nodded.
I will see to it that Maul is ready.
Plagueis pressed his hands together.
It is the will of the dark side that we finally reveal ourselves.
It certainly wasn't that he didn't trust Darth Sidious, but Plagueis had never observed Maul at close range, and he was curious about Sidious's relationship with him. He knew that they had seldom met outside the works, let alone walk together on a balcony of one of Coruscant's most stylish monads in the dead of night, wrapped in their cowled cloaks. But it was only fitting that they should finally do so. With 114D close at hand, Plagueis stood observing the two of them from afar, his presence in the Force minimized. The invasion and occupation of Naboo were proceeding on schedule, and the swamps were being searched in an effort to locate and isolate the principal underwater habitats of the planet's indigenous Gungans before they could pose a threat. But the two Jedi, Queen Amidala, and her retinue of body doubles and guards, had succeeded in blasting their way through the blockade. With Maul's help, counterfeit messages from the Queen's advisor, Sio Bibble, had been transmitted to the missing starship, and one transmission had returned a faint connection trace to the Hutt-owned world of Tatooine. On learning as much, Plagueis had considered asking Jabba to apprehend the Queen, but not for long, out of concern for what the dark side might demand of him in return.
"Tatooine is sparsely populated,"
114D said, repeating what the Dathomiri Zabrak was saying to Sidious.
"If the trace was correct, I will find them quickly, Master."
"Go on,"
Plagueis said quietly.
"In reply, Sidious is instructing Maul to make the Jedi his first priority. Once Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are disposed of, Maul is to return Queen Amidala to Naboo and force her to sign a treaty that cedes control of the planet and its plasma reserves to the Trade Federation."
The droid paused, then added,
"Maul says, at last we reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge."
In the distance, Sidious turned to Maul. 4D sharpened its auditory inputs.
"Sidious says, you have been well trained, my young apprentice. They will be no match for you."
The words stirred deep misgiving in Plagueis, and he stretched out with the Force, attuned to its swirling currents. Momentarily, the gates that obscured the future parted, and he had a glimpse of events to come, or events that might come. Either way, he was not encouraged. Had he and Sidious misunderstood? Would it be better to abort the plan and trust that Palpatine would be elected even without having Naboo fall to the Trade Federation? Once the Jedi learned of the existence of one Sith, would they launch an intense hunt for the other? Sidious had formed an almost filial bond with Maul. Attached to the present, he failed to grasp the truth, that this was the last time he and his apprentice might see each other in the flesh. Events were converging rapidly. Unexpected obstacles notwithstanding, Maul's tracking skills had led him to the missing Queen. But he had failed in his mission. Despite a brief confrontation with Qui-Gon Jinn, the Jedi Master and his party had managed a successful escape. The Zabrak hadn't been killed, as Plagueis had initially feared, but his crimson blade had identified him as a Sith. And now the Jedi, Amidala, and her retinue of guards and handmaidens were inbound to Coruscant in the Queen's reflective starship. Sidious had ordered Maul to go to Naboo to oversee the Nymoidian occupation.
Pestage and Doriana have put a plan in place that will weaken the campaigns of your chief rivals,
Plagueis was saying as he and Palpatine hurried toward the skyhopper that would carry them to the anti-grav platform on which the royal starship had been cleared to land.
Coruscant will soon know that Senator Ainley Teem has been protecting a Dug who is deeply involved with Gardula the Hutt and the Bandogora's Death Stick distribution network.
Another favor from Jabba?
The Hutt has become an ally.
With Black Sun headless, he will have free rein over the spice trade.
For a time, the information about Senator Teem has been sent to Antilles, who has been trying for years to have him removed from the Senate. When the corruption inquest is announced, Teem's support will disappear, and so will support for Antilles, whose ambitions have blinded him to the fact that no one in the Senate wants an overzealous reformer in the chancellorship. The Rim faction will then flock to you in the hope of being able to manipulate you, and the human-centric core faction will back you because you're one of their own.
Sidious regarded him. Were it not for you, Plagueis waved him silent and came to a sudden halt. Sidious walked a few more steps and turned to him.
You're not going to accompany me to greet the Queen?
No. The Jedi are still with her, and our joint presence might allow them to sense our leanings.
You're right, of course.
There's one more issue. The Naboo crisis has finally caught the fancy of Coruscant. If we could force a similar crisis in the Senate, your election would be guaranteed.
Sidious thought about it. There may be a way. He looked hard at Plagueis.
The call for a vote of no confidence in Valorum.
If you...
Not me, Sidious cut him off. Queen Amidala. I will fill her head with doubts about Valorum's inability to resolve the crisis and fears of what Trade Federation rule would mean for Naboo. Then I will take her to the Senate so that she can see for herself how untenable the situation has become.
Grand theater. She'll not only call for a vote of no confidence, she'll flee home to be with her people.
Where we wanted her to begin with.
I trust that the food is better than the view, Dooku remarked without humor as he joined Palpatine at a windowside table in Mock's Cheap Eats the following day.
A small establishment, catering to factory personnel, it overlooked the heart of the works.
The Senate is studying plans to develop housing projects in the flatlands.
Dooku frowned in revulsion. Why not simply build over a radioactive waste dump?
Where there are credits to be made, the lives of ordinary citizens are of little consequence.
Dooku cocked an eyebrow.
I hope you'll put a stop to it.
I'd prefer the works to remain unchanged for a time.
Dooku waved off a waiter and regarded Palpatine with interest.
So, a blockade prevents you from going to Naboo.
And what happens but Naboo comes to you?
Quite a piece of magic.
Palpatine showed him a thin smile.
Yes, my queen has arrived.
Your queen?
Dooku said, tugging at his short beard.
And from all I hear, you may soon be her supreme chancellor.
Palpatine shrugged off the remark, then adopted a more serious look.
That is, however, part of the reason behind my asking you to meet me here.
Worried that you won't receive Jedi backing if you're seen with me in the usual places?
Nothing of the sort. But if I am elected, and if you and I are going to begin to work together, it behooves us to give all appearances of being on opposite sides.
Dooku folded his arms and stared.
Work together in what capacity?
That remains to be seen, but our common goal would be to return the Republic to what it once was by tearing it down.
Dooku didn't say anything for a long moment. And when he spoke, it was as if he were assembling his thoughts on the fly.
With perhaps your homeworld as the spark that touches off a conflagration? Clearly, the crisis has benefited you politically, and that fact alone has certain beings wondering.
He scanned Palpatine's face.
Under normal circumstances, the Council wouldn't have subverted the authority of the Senate by honoring Valorum's request to send Jedi to Naboo. But for Yoda, Mace Windu, and the rest, Valorum is a known quantity, whereas Senators Antilles and Team and you have yet to disclose your true agendas. Take you, for instance. Most are aware that you are a career politician and that you've managed thus far to avoid imbroglios. But what does anyone know about you beyond your voting record, or the fact that you reside in 500 Republica? We all think that there's much more to you than meets the eye, as it were. Something about you that has yet to be uncovered.
Instead of speaking directly to Dooku's point, Palpatine said, I was as surprised as anyone to learn that Master Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan Kenobi were sent to Naboo.
Surprised, of course. But pleased?
Naboo is my home world. I want to see the crisis resolved as quickly as possible.
Do you?
Palpatine held his look. I begin to wonder what may have prompted your confrontational mood. But for the sake of argument, let us say that I feel no shame in taking full advantage of the crisis. Would that cause you to distance yourself from me? Dooku smiled with his eyes, but not in mirth.
On the contrary, as you say, since I'm interested in learning more about the possibility of an alliance.
Palpatine adopted a hooded look. You're resolved to leave the Order?
Even more than when we last spoke.
Because of the Council's decision to intervene at Naboo?
I can forgive them that. The blockade has to be broken, but something else has occurred.
Dooku chose his next words carefully.
Qui-Gon returned from Tatooine with a former slave boy. According to the boy's mother, the boy had no father.
A clone? Palpatine asked uncertainly.
Not a clone, Dooku said. Perhaps conceived by the Force, as Qui-Gon believes.
Palpatine's head snapped back.
You don't sit on the Council. How do you know this?
I have my ways.
Does this have something to do with the prophecy you spoke of?
Everything. Qui-Gon believes that the boy, Anakin is his name, stands at the center of a vergence in the Force, and believes further that his finding him was the will of the Force. Blood tests were apparently performed, and the boy's concentration of midichlorians is unprecedented.
Do you believe that he is the prophesied one?
Chosen one, Dooku amended. No, but Qui-Gon accepts it as fact, and the Council is willing to have him tested.
What is known about this Anakin?
Very little, except for the fact that he was born into slavery 9 years ago, and was, until recently, along with his mother, the property of Gardula the Hutt. Then, a Toydarian junk dealer,
Dooku smirked.
Also, that he won the Boonta Eve Classic pod race.
Palpatine had stopped listening. 9 years old, conceived by the Force. Is it possible? His thoughts rewound at frantic speed to the landing platform on which he and Valorum had welcomed Amidala and her group. Actually not Amidala, but one of her lookalikes, but the sandy-haired boy, this Anakin, swathed in filthy clothing, had been there, along with a Gungan and the two Jedi. Anakin had spent the night in a tiny room in his apartment suite. And I sensed nothing about him.
Qui-Gon is rash, Dooku was saying. Despite his fixation with the living Force, he demonstrates his own contradictions by being a true believer in the prophecy, a foretelling more in line with the unifying Force.
9 years old, Palpatine said when he could. Surely too old to be trained.
If the Council shows any sense.
And what will become of the boy then?
Dooku's shoulders heaved.
Though no longer a slave, he will probably be sent to rejoin his mother on Tatooine.
I understand your disillusionment, Palpatine said.
Dooku shook his head.
I haven't told you all of it. As if the announcement of having found the Chosen One wasn't enough. Qui-Gon discovered that the Trade Federation may have had the help of powerful allies in planning and executing the blockade of Naboo.
Palpatine sat straighter in his chair.
What allies?
On Tatooine, Qui-Gon dueled with an assassin who is well trained in the Jedi arts. But he dismissed the idea that the assassin is some rogue Jedi. He is convinced that the warrior is a Sith.
Ignoring the reactions of apprehensive residents and wary security personnel, Plagueis hastened along a plush corridor in 500 Republica toward Palpatine's suite of crimson rooms. He had planned to be at the Senate building to hear Amidala's call for a vote of no confidence in Valorum, which would strike the first death knell for the Republic. At the last moment, however, Palpatine had contacted him to recount a conversation he had had with Dooku. The fact that Qui-Gon Jinn had identified Maul as a Sith was to be expected. But Dooku's news about a human boy at the center of a vergence of the Force had come as a shock. More, Qui-Gon saw the boy as the Jedi's prophesied Chosen One. He had to see this Anakin Skywalker for himself, had to sense him for himself. He had to know if the Force had struck back again, 9 years earlier, by conceiving a human being to restore balance to the galaxy. Plagueis came to a halt at the entry to Palpatine's apartment. Eventually, one of Queen Amidala's near-identical handmaidens came to the door, a vision in a dark-culled robe, her eyes fixed on the breath mask.
"I'm sorry, sir," she said. "Senator Palpatine is not here."
"I know. I'm here to speak with a guest of the Senator, a young human boy."
Her eyes remained glued on the mask.
"I'm not permitted."
Damask motioned swiftly with his left hand, compelling her to answer him.
"You have my permission to speak."
"I have your permission," she said in a distracted voice.
"Now, where is the boy?"
"Anakin, you mean?"
"Anakin, yes. He's the one. Fetch him, now."
"You just missed him, sir," the handmaiden said.
Plagueis peered past her into Palpatine's suite.
"Missed him?"
He straightened in anger.
"Where is he?"
"Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn came to collect him, sir. I suspect that you can find him at the Jedi Temple."
Plagueis fell back a step, his thoughts reeling. There was still a chance that the Council would decide that Anakin was too old to be trained as a Jedi. That way, assuming he was returned to Tatooine. But if not, if Qui-Gon managed to sway the Council Masters, and they reneged on their own dictates, Plagueis ran a hand over his forehead.
"Are we undone?" he thought. "Have you undone us?"
Chapter 30, Taking the Future from the Now. Magister Damask was still unnerved when he arrived at the Senate building and hurried through its maze of corridors and turbolifts to reach Naboo's station on time for the event. During a recess that ensued after the call for a vote of no confidence, Queen Amidala and the pair of retainers she had arrived with had decided to return to 500 Republica. But Panaka was there in his brown leather cap and jerkin, along with Sate Pestage and Kinman Doriana. With scarcely a word of acknowledgement, Plagueis edged past the three men to join Palpatine on the hover platform.
"Did you speak with him?" Palpatine asked, while the voice of the senator from Kuat boomed through the rotunda's speakers. The Mune shook his head in anger.
"Qui-Gon had already been there. They've gone to the temple."
"There's still a chance."
"Yes, but if the boy's midichlorian concentrations are as high as Dooku hinted they are, then the Jedi aren't likely to allow him to escape their clutches."
"High midichlorian counts don't always equate to force talents, you told me yourself."
"That's not what concerns me,"
Damask said, but he went no further. Gesturing broadly, he asked,
"Where do we stand?"
"Antilles was placed into nomination by Com Fordox, team by Edsel Bargan."
"Traitors, Fordox and Bargan."
Palpatine was about to reply when the voice of Mas Amida filled the rotunda.
"The Senate recognizes Senator Orn Fritar of Ryloth,"
the Shagrian said from the podium. Say Tarrio was there as well, but Valorum, all but ousted from power, had either disappeared or was seated out of sight. The big blue Twi'lek stood proudly in the bow of the platform as it floated toward the center of the rotunda, flanked by hovercans. In the curved rear of the platform were Fritar's consort, a petite red-skinned Twi'lek, and Ryloth's co-senator and deathstick distributor, Connus Trell.
"Ryloth is proud to place into nomination one who has not only devoted 20 years of unflagging service to the Republic, while managing to steer a gallant course through the storms that continue to lash this body, but whose homeworld has become the latest target of corporate greed and corruption. Beings of all species and all worlds, I nominate Senator Palpatine of Naboo."
Cheers and applause rang out from nearly every sector of the hall, growing louder and more enthusiastic as Naboo's platform detached from the docking station and hovered to join those of Alderaan and Malastar.
"You've done it, Darth Plagueis," Palpatine said quietly and without a glance.
"Not yet. I will not rest until I'm certain of a win."
It was late in the evening when Plagueis made his way onto a public observatory that provided a vantage on the proprietary arabesque of a landing platform on which Queen Amidala's royal starship basked in the ambient light. With the cowl of his hood raised, he moved to one of the stationary macro-binocular posts and pressed his eyes to the cushioned eye grips. Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and the boy had arrived at the platform in a Jedi ship. Amidala, her handmaidens and guards, and a loose-limbed Gungan in an open-topped hemispherical air taxi. Just then, the latter group was ascending the starship's boarding ramp, but Qui-Gon and the round-faced desert urchin had stopped short of the ship to speak about something.
"What?" Plagueis asked himself. "What topic has summoned such an earnest look to Qui-Gon's face, and such confused urgency in the boy?"
Lifting his face from the macro-binoculars, he stretched out with the Force and fell victim to an assault of perplexing images. Ferocious battles in deep space, the clashing of lightsabers, partitions of radiant light, a black-helmeted cyborg rising from a table. By the time his gaze had returned to the platform, Qui-Gon and the boy had disappeared. trying desperately to make some sense of the images granted him by the Force. He stood motionless, watching the starship lift from the platform and climb into the night.